This is Movies for the Blind, episode 292, The Vampire Bat, part 2 of 2.
It's a good explanation, if you can believe it.
Hi, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. We continue with The Vampire Bat, the second film we featured starring Faye Ray and Melvin Douglas. In Woman in the Shadows, Douglas was a bad guy. That kind of typifies the variety of roles he enjoyed in his long career. He was the leading man in no less than 3 Greta Garbo films, the rich father of the young hero in Captain's Courageous, the anti-hero Paul Newman's father in Hud, and the benefactor of Peter Sellers in Being There. Those last 2 roles won Douglas Academy Awards for Best Supporting Actor. This time, Douglas is a police inspector in a small German village frustrated by a series of deaths which appear to be the work of vampires. Add to the situation the fact that bats have been fluttering around and that they've found a friend in the kind and somewhat slow vagrant named Herman. Suspicion has been piled on Herman for the deaths, suspicion led by longtime townsperson Kringen. But Douglas's character Carl wants to stay on the side of reason with his girlfriend, Ruth, Faye Ray. Ruth's boss, the noted scientist Dr. von Neumann, is somewhat on the fence, as he's about to show in the conclusion of The Vampire Bat. In the doctor's study...
Ah, this is it.
He reads from the cover of a book.
Traits sur les appréciations des esprits et sur les vampires by Augustin Dom Calame in 1746.
He opens it and reads through a monocle.
Let us suppose that these corpses do not actually stir from their tombs.
Gussie enters.
But only the ghosts or spirits appear to the living. Wherefore do these phantoms present themselves, and what is it that energizes them? Is it actually the soul of the dead man which has not yet departed to its final destination?
She joins Carl, Ruth, and Emil.
Now, how could a corpse buried under 4 or 5 feet of earth get out to do any such foolishness? I don't believe it.
It's a fair question, Doctor. How could it?
Well, according to accepted theory, the vampire dematerializes its body and reintegrates it outside the grave.
It's a good explanation, if you can believe it. Mm. And while I'm standing here listening to all this rubbish, there's a poor man in the garden in danger of a tetanus infection. Now, what should I do for him, Doctor? Shall I apply mechlorophone or 2% solution of bichloride?
Well, either will do. Get some gauze and some mechlorophone.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll wait here.
Emil steps away.
Difficult to believe, isn't it?
Carl reads.
It's impossible to believe. And yet, it would explain these deaths, wouldn't it?
They turn to a door where Shane enters with his men.
Ah, Brett Schneider. Pardon our intrusion, Dr. von Neumann. But after what you saw last night, you'll be interested in this as well. Well,
what happened?
Kringen was found dead an hour ago, with the 2 punctures in his neck and not a drop of blood in his body. And what's more, Hermann Glyde has disappeared.
What?
Now are you convinced that we were right and you were wrong?
That'd be proof enough for anybody. Kringen said Hermann would get him, and he did.
Well, Brett Schneider?
He points to one man.
I appoint you my deputy. Organize a searching party and comb this countryside from one end to the other. Find Hermann Glyde and bring him in, but don't harm him. You understand?
What good will that do? He is a vampire. There's only one thing for us to do when we find him. Kill him and drive a stake through his
Hermann
heart.
Glyde will be tried by a court of law. If the charge against him is proven true, the law will decide what to do with him, not you. Now get your men together and do as I tell you.
That's the way to talk.
They leave.
I'm going into town for a little while, Doctor. Would you care to come along?
Oh, I hardly believe so. There's little to be done until they find the boy. If you need me then,
I'll... All right, thanks. I'll let you know.
He steps to Ruth and kisses her hand. She gazes at him, and he leaves.
I feel I was going to faint.
Oh, there, Auntie. There's nothing here to be afraid of. Here comes Amo with your mercurochrome and bandages. Run along now and take care of that patient of yours.
Oh, heavens, I forgot all about him.
Oh. She takes the supplies from Amo.
Oh, my heart. Oh.
Then she leaves.
Poor auntie. She's had every ailment in the book.
Well, a lot aren't, I'm afraid.
Particularly a palpitation of the auriculoventricular tricuspid and mitral valve, Doctor.
He drops his monocle on his desk.
Well, I had to tell her something to satisfy her.
Later, A posse of men carrying torches runs between hills. Herman scrambles clumsily over a mound of dirt. Pausing to look back, he runs into a cave. He goes further inside and looks back again. The men are led by two dogs over the mound into the cave. The first man holds on to their leashes.
Come on, men. We've got him. We can't get away from here now. Some of you's around that way. Quiet! If he tries to get past you, you know what to do!
Herman scurries through darkness. The men enter the cave, with others entering through a smaller opening. Herman runs onward, then looks back. He runs around a corner and flattens himself against a wall. The groups converge and run on with their torches. They illuminate the high wall they run along. Herman keeps hiding.
There it is, men! Here, boys!
Holding his hand out, the leader approaches Herman.
Herman, you're going back to the village with us.
He backs away as they advance.
Come on. We won't hurt you.
No. No, won't go. Herman afraid.
Come on. You're going with us, Herman.
No.
You're going with us.
No!
Come on!
They all break into a run further into the cave. They stop at a pit.
Come on, Herman. We won't hurt you. Come on.
No! No! No!
He looks down. He falls in. The men gather and stare down.
Come, that settles him.
Yes, let's go.
Most of the men go, but the leader keeps one of them with him and peers down into the pit.
We've got to make certain.
I won't go down there.
Nobody asked you to. I'll go myself.
Can you see him?
He's on a ledge about 50 feet down. I'll get a rope. We've got to make certain, I tell you.
Later, Emil wanders down a hallway. In his study, Dr. von Neumann stares intensely into space.
You must be careful, Emil. Very careful.
Emil approaches a door. It is opened into a bedroom where Georgiana is asleep. He advances slowly. He looks up from her and stares around. In the study, von Neumann glances down, collecting himself.
No.
He looks up.
It must be, it must be. She's no better than the rest. I've got to go on.
He stares ahead again. In the bedroom, Emil looks down again at Georgiana, still asleep. He bends down to her. Later, he slowly carries her down the stairs to the laboratory. He crosses it, stepping past the tables and beakers, and approaches von Neumann. He gestures for Emil to move past him, and Emil obeys. Von Neumann follows. Later, a form the size of a large human heart appears to breathe, making bubbles in a tank of fluid. Nearby is Georgiana's body, arms out to the sides, held on a kind of rack. As Emil stands nearby, von Neumann, in surgical scrubs, pulls on gloves. He turns to the body. Opening a metal circular device with tiny spikes inside it, he places it carefully around the body's neck. The device is attached by a thin hose to a flask. Blood begins to stream into the flask. Later. The bell is above Georgiana's bed, where the body lies again under the covers. On the floor beside it is a small crucifix. In the living room, von Neumann reads on a sofa. Glancing toward the door, he sets down the book and dispenses coffee from a pot. Picking up a cup and saucer, he stands and walks through the foyer to the door. He answers it for Carl, Ruth, and Gussie.
Oh, it's you, Doctor. Good evening.
I'm sorry to have to disturb you, Doctor, but we simply couldn't make Georgiana hear the bell.
That's quite all right, my dear. Georgiana's becoming careless. Very careless.
Yes, I've noticed that, too. In my opinion, she has nagana. That's sleeping sickness. You know the symptoms, Doctor. At first, I thought it was creeping paralysis. So I stuck a pin in her leg to see. And there was a splendid reaction of the reflex motor nerve.
Why, Auntie.
Oh, you're shocked. So was she.
Won't you join me in some coffee?
Yes, thanks, Doctor. We will. There are a few questions I'd like to ask you, Paul.
About blood and murders and vampires, I suppose.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Well, so am I. Well, good night. If such a thing is possible, I'm going to bed.
Won't you join us too, Frau Schnappmann?
Coffee at this hour of the night? No, thank you. I'm going to stick to my Mona acid ester salicylic salad. Acid, Doctor, acid. Good night.
When she heads upstairs, the doctor goes to Ruth and Carl on the sofa.
What's the news in the village, Carl? Have they located Herman yet?
No, not a trace of him.
Von Neumann sits.
I hate to think of that poor misfit being hunted down like a dog.
He drinks the coffee.
You know, I simply can't bring myself to believe in that vampire theory.
Will you pour, Ruth?
She dispenses coffee.
I know, Carl. Our saner karma judgment tells us that such things can't be, and yet, here, for instance, in this ponderous tome, are cited 1,001 phobias and complexes.
She serves Carl.
That human beings are heir to. Some of them are strange, more untenable even than werewolves and vampires. Could I have some more, please?
You drink entirely too much coffee.
Well, it's my one weakness.
She serves.
And also my excuse for tolerating Georgiana's laxity in other things. She does know how to make good coffee. Thank you. She brings it to me every night at exactly 10 o'clock. And when I've drunk it all, then I know it's time to quit.
Yes, and eat breakfast so you can have more coffee.
No. Oh.
They smile. Upstairs, the door to Georgiana's room is open. Gussie happens by it and looks inside.
Georgiana, you mustn't lie like that.
She approaches the bed.
You'll get yourself a tricooler.
She touches her shoulder, finding her eyes open and blank. Gussie faints. Downstairs.
That was Auntie.
Ruth rushes off, followed by Carl, then the doctor. Reaching the dark room, she turns on a light.
Auntie!
And bends down to her, turning her over to sit up in Carl's arms.
Right.
They get her to stand as the doctor goes to the bed and Emil arrives.
I'm silly imagination.
She glimpses the body again. As Emil and Ruth help her away, Carl goes to the bed and examines Georgiana. He turns to von Neumann.
The same two wounds, Doctor.
He nods.
And my last words to her were angry ones. A petulant reprimand for being late with my coffee.
What time is that?
About 2 or 3 minutes after 10.
She's been dead then about 45 minutes.
Carl glances at the doctor, then the body.
Bloodless like the rest. It passes all belief. Ruth's aunt saw Herman Gleibe in the garden this morning. Could it be that he...
They look at each other. Then they turn to the doorway, where Emil returns, looking down at the body.
You were the first one here. What happened?
I was in my room reading. My door was open. I must have dozed off for a minute or so because I awoke to hear Frau Schnappmann scream.
You say your door was open?
Yes, my room is very poorly ventilated.
And you saw nothing? Heard nothing unusual?
Nothing.
The doctor notices the crucifix on the floor.
Carl, what is it?
He picks it up.
This crucifix belonged to Martha.
Carl takes it.
See who it is, Emil.
Emil leaves.
Can you positively identify this as belonging to Martha?
Without a doubt. I saw it in her room the night she died.
How in the world did it get here?
Hermann Gleib was in her room. He had that crucifix in his hands. And Hermann was here today.
Maybe here now, for all we know.
Carl hurries out, and von Neumann watches him, then looks at the body. Ruth opens a door and crosses a room.
Who is it?
Ah.
Oh.
She unlocks and opens the door to the hall.
How is she?
She's had a real shock this time, but she'll be all right. I'm putting her to bed.
Leave her there. Don't let her out of this room. And don't you leave it either.
Well, what do you mean?
It looks as if Hermann Gleib is the killer after all. It's possible he may be hiding here in the castle.
Well, what makes you think so?
I'll tell you later. Stay in your room and keep your door locked.
Don't worry about that.
He leaves, and she closes the door, locking it.
I heard every word he said, and I don't think there's any use of them searching for Hermann. They should look for a dog, a human-faced dog.
Andy, the doors and windows are all locked. There's nothing to be afraid of now.
Well, who said I was afraid? I'm not a bit afraid.
No, of course you're not afraid, but you must get some rest.
Rest in this awful place? With dog-faced Hermans and human-faced bats and blood and murders and vampires?
Later, von Neumann paces, waiting. Carl approaches him.
Find anything, Carl?
There's an unbroken cobweb in that window. If Hermann did it, he came through the door.
He must have. And yet I don't understand how he could find his way up here without us hearing him. Yet Emil was asleep, and I was in the library. Yes, he could have done it. The facts all point to it.
Emil returns.
What was it, Emil?
The Burgomeister. He has news for Herr Brettschneider about Hermann.
The doctor looks at Carl.
Oh.
They all leave Georgiana's room and go down the stairs to the foyer. Shane meets them at the bottom.
Pardon the intrusion, Doctor. Pardon the intrusion. I knew Carl was here, and I thought you wouldn't mind if I ran in to tell him the news.
About Hermann?
Yes. He fell into the devil's well in the cave.
He's dead?
Dead as a doornail. This ends our troubles, Carl. The vampire's dead. I can feel it in my bones.
Well, your bones may be wrong. What time did this happen?
Quite early, about 9 o'clock. The cave is nearly 2 hours from here. That's why we didn't hear it sooner.
Well, it may interest you to know that there's been another death after your vampire died.
Who?
Dr. Von Neumann's housekeeper. Right here in her own room.
Mother of mercy! What are we going to do?
Well, a natural death wouldn't kill a vampire, Carl. You know the accepted theory. A stake driven through the heart.
Oh, yes, that's the theory, all right.
But
what?
But they did. They drove a stake through his heart.
Good God, are we living in the Middle Ages?
It wasn't through my sanction, Carl. Massauer did it. He told me so himself.
Carl scowls at the doctor.
Well, that ends the vampire theory as far as I'm concerned. Hermann Gleib died in the accepted fashion for killing a vampire. Oh, no, there's some human agency at work here, Doctor. A madman who kills to satisfy some violent, sadistic urge.
Yes, you're right, Carl. I've been a fool, a superstitious fool.
Did they leave his body in the cave?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Well, in view of what's happened, don't you think you owe him a decent burial?
You're right. In view of what has happened, we do owe him that, Carl. I'll see to it at once, this very instant. And I'll make arrangements for Georgiana's removal to the morgue. Good night, Doctor. Pardon the intrusion.
Good night, Gustav.
Pardon the intrusion.
He leaves.
Well?
Carl paces away.
Here I am, just where I started weeks ago. There isn't a single theory that doesn't lead straight into a stone wall. I've jested about this vampire business because my better judgment told me it was a lot of nonsense. Then I reached the point where I was willing to accept even that. Because it seemed to satisfy the equation.
All of us are a bit superstitious.
I don't know which way to turn. Where to look, what to look for. Why should anyone want human blood? Why?
Calm yourself, Carl.
Calm myself? With all these unsolved murders staring me in the face and no solution in sight? How much blood is there in the human body, Doctor?
About 6 liters, approximately.
Can you think of any purpose for which that amount of blood might be used?
The doctor lights a pipe.
No. Not even in transfusion.
That's the point which stops me. There isn't any other use for human blood. Murderers leave clues. And these atrocities are murders, Doctor. Those simple fools in the village can believe what they like, but you and I are sane-thinking people. And you know and I know, Doctor, that these are murders. The last one was done here. In this very house, right under this roof. All right, I'll start here. I'm going over every foot of this place, both inside and out. Nobody, sane or insane, is clever enough to get away with murder without leaving a clue of some sort. And I'm going to find that clue.
Now, come, Carl. You mustn't let your nerves run away with you. Here. These...
He holds a bottle that says poison, sleeping tablets.
These will help to give you a good night's sleep.
Carl is distracted, thinking.
If there are any clues, they'll be here in the morning when your nerves are calm and your...
He puts some tablets in an envelope.
Your mind is clear.
Which he hands to Carl.
You can go home and rest.
I imagine a thousand demons were after me as I came down those stairs.
Ruth, didn't I tell you to stay in your room?
Yes, but I wanted the doctor to come up and quiet Auntie. You know, it isn't her imagination this time.
Of course, Ruth. I'll come right away. Take my advice, young man. Go home and go to bed.
Good night, Carl.
Von Neumann steps away.
Good night, Ruth.
Carl pats her hand, but is still deep in thought as she goes. He turns to watch them go up the stairs.
Good night, Carl.
Good night, Doctor.
Rubbing his chin, Carl heads for the front door. Later, in pajamas and a robe, he steps to a table and lights a cigarette. All is quiet outside. Carl paces across his bedroom. He turns to a full-length window covered with light curtains, then steps to the table and sets his watch. Outside, someone walks alone through the village. In his room, Carl gets the envelope of pills from his jacket pocket and opens it, pouring them into his hand. Out on a roof, a hand appears, clutching the edge. It pulls and lifts. In his room, Carl drops the envelope on the table, then turns. Someone is on the roof, in the doctor's study.
If his lights are on,
he stares ahead.
You must wait, Emil. Wait until he has gone to bed.
Emil waits on the roof. Carl walks toward the window. He opens the window and looks out into darkness. Walking back to the table, he turns off a lamp, then goes to his bed and takes off the robe. He sits on the bed, watched through another window. Still smoking, Carl climbs under the covers. He puts out his cigarette in a nightstand ashtray. Turning off another lamp, he settles into bed in darkness. Outside, Emil moves. An arm reaches across the open window and pulls him into the space. Creeps inside and slowly crosses the room toward Carl in bed. His shadow starts to cover Carl. In the study, the doctor stares.
Handle him as you did the others, Emil.
Ruth steps in behind him, unseen.
You are strong.
She watches.
Very strong. I am waiting for you. Waiting for you to bring him to the laboratory.
Von Neumann blinks and turns his eyes. Ruth backs out, closing the door. He stares ahead again and frowns. Outside the study, Ruth considers. Von Neumann stands and steps toward the door. Her eyes widen when she hears him and turns. He opens the door, then steps back around a corner. She enters without seeing him. Then he grabs her arm.
You. You're the one. What mad thing are you doing?
Mad? Is one who has sold the secret of life to be considered mad? Life. Created in the laboratory. No mere crystalline growth, but tissue. Living, growing tissue. Life that moves, pulsates, and demands food for its continued growth. You shudder in horror. So did I the first time. But what are a few lives be weighed in the balance against the achievement of biological science? Think of it. I have lifted the veil. I have created life. Wrested the secret of life from life. Now do you understand? For the lives of those who have gone before, I have created life.
I'll tell Carl.
You may. For tonight, Carl's name will be added to yours. And all of those whom this achievement will immortalize.
Later, in his surgical scrubs, he adjusts instruments over the tank holding his creation. Nearby, Ruth sits, tied to a chair and gagged. From a flask, he lets a drop fall into the fluid where the creation breathes. Ruth watches as a fan turns beside her. Glancing at her, he continues making adjustments. As shadows move behind him, a body being carried. The doctor stares thoughtfully through the bars of the frame holding the instruments. Then he looks down. He steps away to the table to put on his gloves. Ruth struggles, staring with wide eyes. The body rests where Georgiana's had. The doctor turns to it and reaches up to turn on a light. He looks down and uncovers the body. It's Emil. Nearby, Carl draws a pistol.
I didn't take your sleeping tablets, Doctor.
He stares at Carl and swallows. Carl glances at Ruth and the creation. Watching Von Neumann closely, he backs away toward her. The doctor watches him as well. With one hand, Carl unties Ruth's gag. Emil slowly wakes, confused. Still watching Carl, Von Neumann steps forward.
Emil brought them here. He's the one who murdered them.
Stay where you are. You'll have a chance to tell everything, Doctor.
He grabs the gun, and they fight for it. Emil watches with wide eyes. As Carl and the doctor struggle, the gun is dropped, and Emil gets it.
I'll take care of Von Neumann. Get her out of here.
Carl steps aside, and Emil holds the gun on his boss, who faces him. Carl unties Ruth and helps her stand and step away. Von Neumann stares hard at Emil, who still holds the gun on him. Carl and Ruth leave the lab, then turn back.
You stay here.
Carl goes back in, finding Von Neumann lying on the table where the tank had been, and Emil on the floor. He backs out, closing the door. He takes Ruth's hand.
Von Neumann and Emil.
Gussie comes downstairs.
Doctor! Dr. Von Neumann! Carl, she mustn't see them.
He nods and they hurry to meet her.
Where is Dr. Van Leeuwen? I must see him immediately.
Aunt Bessie, you can't. He can't be disturbed.
Oh, but I must see him. I simply must. Well, that hydrous magnesium sulfate he gave me is affecting me most peculiarly.
She hiccups.
You'll pardon me?
She walks back upstairs, then runs.
Hydrous magnesium sulfate. Well, that's Epsom salts.
Ruth has to laugh, burying her face in Carl's chest as Gussie keeps running upstairs. The end. Described from Movies for the Blind. And that was The Vampire Bat. Our bad guy was Lionel Atwill, no stranger to being a bad guy. He was the nemesis of Basil Rathbone's Sherlock Holmes in two films, but Atwill and Rathbone were allies in Son of Frankenstein. I'll be away next week, but I will be able to send a preview of our next film from my foreign location. Fancy. To find out more about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, go to the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast Creative Commons license. We're also now happy to be on Stitcher, so feel free to subscribe, share, and say nice things. You can also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Make sure you're following updates on Facebook. And subscribe to us on YouTube, where we show you how it's done. The movies are from the Internet Archive, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week, sort of. Take care.